Good morning, Elliot. How are you?
Have you called it good?
Well, there's better words than that, though. I mean, I should come up with better words than that.
Should being the operative word.
Yeah. Exceptional? Would that be fair?
Yeah, I think it's fair.
I don't know that there's been one as good. I mean, last year, something about the Hawks and Kings was unbelievable.
That was a great series. The Game 7 double overtime was tremendous stuff.
Yeah, but how does this one stack up for you thus far?
Well, it's up there. I mean, we'll see if we get a seventh game, right? But it's been really good. There's no question about it. And, you know, these are two teams in a league where so many people are having trouble scoring. You've got two teams that are really capable of it. And they really go at each other, too. It's not, it was physical early. It's not quite as physical maybe now, but, you know, they're going up and down the ice. And what makes games better? Oftentimes it's shaky goaltending. And I thought Crawford was pretty good last night, but Anderson had by far his worst night of the playoffs, and the Ducks were lucky to get away with it.
Yeah, it's funny. Crawford, you don't like allowing three goals early. There could have been six past him in the first.
Yeah, he really bailed them out. There's no question about it. He was terrific. He was the only reason they were even in the game. And Anderson, like I said, he had a really rough night. Taves caught him leaning. I mean, the first goal against him was kind of ugly. The second goal against him was really ugly. And then Taves basically shot that puck to Mars. He hit it so hard. But the fourth one, Taves caught him leaning. And good on our producers, I'm not even sure is producing that game, who had the Patrick Kane goal ready right away that won the Stanley Cup in 2010, because it was from a similarly oblique angle, as Danny Gallivan would say.
I believe at one point when he released that puck off his stick, it was either on or below the goal line. That just can't go in if you're Frederick Anderson with, 48 seconds left?
No, you can't do that. And I think it shows where Anaheim is as a team. I mean, that can really deflate you. And, they stayed calm. They came out and they won. They had two chances. Cogliano had a good chance in overtime. And then, of course, Bolesky won it with the bad Bobby Orr dive. But, you know, I think it's easy for teams to fall apart in that situation. It's easy for goalies to fall apart. You always wonder how they're going to handle the next shot. But it was interesting. You know, Christine interviewed Getzlaff after the game on the ice, and he just talked about how you got to stay calm, make sure everybody's okay, regroup, start going. And Boudreaux in the postgame gave a really good quote about how he went in there and just yelled at them and said, you know, it's like, cue Herb Brooks, it's our time, and let's win it. And obviously the Ducks handled it really well, because they came out in that overtime and they were aggressive and they won it quick.
It was such a wild game for momentum swings. It's 3-0 early, and it looks like the Ducks are going to run away with it. The Hawks own the puck in the second period, get it within one. Then the Ducks get what feels like an insurance marker before Taves score his sixth and then his seventh of the postseason in the final minute 50. I mean, just when you think you have this series figured out, I mean, you cannot turn the TV off until it's over.
Well, if you remember the first round, when Quenneville was pulling all those goalies, when he was going Crawford, Darling, Crawford, you know, Chicago showed in that series they can handle that. And, you know, you don't win a Stanley Cup twice and still have your core there and say, all right, you know, we can handle a lot. The one thing that the Blackhawks show you is, you know, and how many times in these playoffs have we seen games where, you know, one team gets out to a big lead early, and all of a sudden they lose. Like, you know, the night that Vancouver got eliminated, they were up on Calgary 3-0 early, and they lost that game, 7-4? And, you know, a couple times in this Ranger-Tampa series, one team got up early and they lost. And, you know, the Rangers got up 2-0 early, they lost a game pretty big. You know, I think Chicago especially has proven, and against Nashville, no matter how much you get them down early, they're going to come back. Like, don't even celebrate, because they're going to come back and get into the game, and it's up to you to withstand them. And Anaheim is just so deep and so good, and I mean, that stat's incredible. They're 15 games into the playoffs, and they haven't lost in regulation yet. You know, they can handle it, and they've proven they can handle it. And they know, one thing they know is that they're going to go back into Chicago on Wednesday night for game 6, and that game is going to be brutal. I mean, they are going to get everything Chicago has at them, and if they knock them out on Wednesday night, they're going to earn it. It was funny, you know, after, you know, Anaheim went up 2-1 in this series, the way they went up in that game, you know, one GM said to me, is this the night the Blackhawks finally crack? Like, is there ever a case where they're going to say, okay, we're beaten up, we're hurt, we've got no defense, you know, maybe we're going to just finally fold? And the exact reverse has happened. They withstood 3 goals in 37 seconds to win game 4. They withstood 3 goals early to send game 5 to overtime. I mean, you know, Ryan, that game 6 is not, you know, if the Ducks win this series tomorrow night, it's not going to be easy.
No, and that's that building. I mean, it does not get a tougher of tasks in the last decade than go win in Chicago. L.A. managed to do it last year in that incredible series we referenced off the top. Is Bob Murray getting enough credit for what he's done here in Anaheim? This isn't even a cap team. It's a budget team,
yeah.
Sort of the St. Louis and San Jose kind of, well, we're not going to be right at that number. We might be close, but we can't keep everyone. We can't pay everyone. They moved out Bobby Ryan, which looks like a brilliant move.
Yeah.
Patrick Maroon, a guy no one had heard of 3 years ago, they get from Philadelphia. He's blossomed into a top-line winger that weighs 230 pounds. I mean, the more you look at this roster, the more I'm determined it's the deepest we've ever seen.
Well, he is getting credit because he was nominated for GM of the Year. So, you know, his peers certainly recognize it. So you can say that he definitely is getting some credit. You know, one of the things about, you know, Bob Murray is that he doesn't talk a lot. You know, he's of all the GMs, it's not that he's not accessible, you know, because he is if you need him, but he prefers not to be. So he's not one of those guys who really searches for a lot of attention. Plus, also, he's out in Anaheim. They don't get a ton of coverage. But if you look at it, he's had 2 really good years back-to-back. You know, even though they lost in the first round last year, you know, he signed Getzlaff and Perry. Do you remember how everybody was saying the Ducks had no chance to get Getzlaff and Perry signed? And he got it done. And they found a lot of guys. There's a lot of guys they've drafted who, you know, weren't first-rounders, who've been good players for them. They were later picks. He's made really good trades. I mean, the Dupre trade for Ben Lovejoy is a heist. And, you know, and you look at the goalies, he's got Anderson and Gibson still on early contracts, and they've got them within one win, or Anderson has got them within one win of the final. When you are a team, as you say, Ryan, that's a budget team, you know, your mistakes really kill you. You know, if every team now in the cap world, you know, you can't bury contracts in the minors as easily anymore. Everybody in a cap world, your mistakes get you. But, you know, if you're a cap team, a team that's up there, you have a less of a chance that it can hurt you so badly. And if you look at these guys, you know, if you make a mistake when you're the Anaheim Ducks, it's brutal. And he hasn't made too many of them. He's got a really good team on some really good deals. But the one time I was talking to him earlier this year, I went out there just after the trade deadline when Montreal was out there. And the one thing he did tell me is that, you know, he thought he got through one of his biggest challenges with Getzlaff and Perry. Well, there's more coming now. You know, Ryan Kessler's up in a year. He's going to have to give Lindholm a second contract. He's one of the best young defensemen in the league. He's going to have to give Silverberg his next contract. They've got to decide if they're going to keep Matt Bolesky, whose price is going through the roof. Like now, and then he's got his 2 goalies. He's going to have next contracts for Anderson and Gibson. So he knows that the window in a lot of ways for the Ducks is now, because in a year or two, they're going to have some really hard decisions to make.
If Matt Bolesky does want to do the highest bidder July 1st, I have a chance to set up my family for life, what kind of a contract do you think could be tabled if, theoretically, one GM has to outbid 29 others?
Well, I think you're probably looking somewhere in the $5 million range, right? Like, I mean, the guy's proving he can score. You know, he's not a guy who's going to create his own shot necessarily. He's not the guy who's going to take the puck and go down the ice and do something and create something. But he's a guy who's going to get down the ice himself, and he's going to get into position. And if you get him the puck in an area where he can score, he will. Like, if you've seen his goals, look at his goals the last two games. Last night, he goes in, and I thought Mike Johnson did a great job in the replay of showing how Beleski, you know, that was a bit of a rolling puck, how Beleski got down on one knee, got his hand low, and made sure he was in a position where he wasn't going to fin on the rolling puck. He got his stick on it. And he was right there, and he put it in a place where there was no chance Crawford was going to make that save. And if you look at his goal from Game 5, there's a turnover. He gets it above the circle. It's just a brilliant shot that Crawford's got no chance with. If he's like, it's almost like a three-point shooter in the NBA. If you get him the ball in a spot where he is comfortable, he's going to get it in the net. And those guys are hard to find. Look, it's a tough league to score goals in now, and if you can do it, you're going to get paid. You know, I think Anaheim made a real run to sign him at the deadline, but they just couldn't get it done. You know, Bob Murray wouldn't tell me much about it, except I know he was frustrated that he couldn't get it done. Well, the price is only going up, and you can see how in a market where there's not a lot of guys and you need scoring, that Beleski's numbers could be 5.
What are you hearing from MLSE regarding the new president, and then, of course, the Leafs GM hunt doesn't seem terribly hot as much as the coaching search was hot.
Well, Shanahan made it pretty clear it was likely that, you know, the coach was going to get hired before the GM was. So I don't think anybody should be surprised. He's also made it pretty clear that it's very possible the GM does not get hired until after the draft. So, you know, and the other thing too, Ryan, in this city, and I know that you're new here. You know, you're a Calgary guy. Maybe you're looking for houses again. Who knows?
But, very expensive, I've noticed, Ellen. Yeah.
What's that?
Very expensive, I'm told.
Yeah, it's a very hot market here.
Very hot.
I'll tell you that, Ryan. The people of Toronto have to get out of this idea of what they're thinking the GM is. Like, the way the setup is going to work here in Toronto, it's going to be different. It's not like the way that we understand a GM is going to be. In Toronto, Brendan Shanahan is going to have the final say. Mike Babcock is going to have a huge say. And so are the other three guys that are already there, Mark Hunter, Kyle Dubas, and Brandon Pridham. The GM here is going to be responsible. Like, he'll have a say, whoever it is, absolutely. But what his role is going to be is that, okay, the group's going to sit down, and they're going to say, here's our plan, here's what we want to do. And the GM is going to be the person who's going to be in charge of facilitating that plan. He's going to be the guy who's going to be calling out the other teams, you know, what's out there? What do you got? Who's available? This is what we're looking for. And he'll be the one who'll be doing the groundwork on all those deals. Ultimately, you know, Shanahan's going to have to sign off on this stuff because he's going to have the final authority. But that's what I think this GM is going to be. And I don't think it's a big deal at all that the coach was hired first, because with Babcock, you know he's going to have a big stick in all this. And if it was Boucher, it wasn't really going to matter because he was going to have some say, but he wasn't going to be overruling the GM or Shanahan on anything. You've got Mark Hunter, who's going to be in charge of the draft. So if there's a new GM in place by then, it doesn't matter because those are going to be Hunter's picks anyway. I mean, I just think it's going to be a very different position. And, you know, who's left that they're going to talk to? I mean, if it's going to be Mike Fuda from L.A., he's not going to be available till after the draft anyway. George McPhee, I mean, in Washington, he oversaw it, but there was a guy named Ross Mahoney who did a lot of it. Like, I don't think it really matters that if they don't have a GM in place. As for the president and CEO, I'm still under the impression that they're going to just figure it out this week and see if they can approve John Cassidy.
Who is he and why does he fit for MLSE?
Who is he? Well, if you're in the media business in Toronto, you've known him for a long time. He was recently at Corus Entertainment, same position. He retired. I think he's always kind of been in the picture for this. They've looked around. They've had some people they wanted to talk to. They've had other people who declined to talk to them. And, you know, it's getting close. Tim Leiwicki's term is supposed to be up at the end of next month. And so they finally just, from what I understand, just decided that Cassidy was going to be the guy. And he's not a guy who loves a lot of headlines. He's pretty quiet. And I think this organization feels it's made enough headlines over the years, and it'll be pretty happy with somebody who's quiet.
Just another media angle for MLSE, owned by Bell and Rogers.
Yes. And now let's bring in somebody from Chorus.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
It's like Age of Empires. Everybody battles for their fiefdom.
Okay. I don't know exactly where that reference is, but sure. Hey, here's one for you.
You're not a video game guy, eh?
Apparently, yeah. No, I'm
really not either, but the ad always comes up on like autoplay and stuff like that.
Is that Kate Upton? Is that the one with the...
Yeah.
Whoa. Okay. Yeah, I've seen that.
It's tough to miss that commercial.
Yeah, it's very well done. It's art. If they have a guy that can do the draft, they've got a capologist and a rising star young GM who a lot of people think is on a trajectory to be a GM in a couple of years.
Yeah.
They have a hands-on coach and a president who everything's running across his desk anyway. I mean, they're now going to have pretty much gone through a trade deadline and a draft without a new GM. Why do they even need a GM?
Well, they had a GM at the draft, and that's a lot of what Nonis did. Like, a lot of what Nonis was doing this past year was, you know, putting the deals together. You know, I think, first of all, maybe you don't necessarily need one. I mean, there's some talk that maybe Mark Hunter ends up being the GM anyway.
Right.
But I don't see, you look with Babcock, okay, how did they get Babcock? Well, you know, they put up together a huge offer, and he decided to look at the opportunity and take it. You know, that's your advantage when you're the Toronto Maple Leafs and a few other teams. There's no salary cap on what you spend off the ice. So if you see somebody out there that you really think can help your team, you might as well make them part of your team. Like, you know, I think the Maple Leafs have a lot of interest, too, in Jeff Gorton, who's the assistant general manager of the Rangers. If he's the guy you want and you think he can help you, go out and get him. Now, I'm not sure that they're going to be able to do it. You know, the Rangers are still alive, you know, pending tonight, and he is not being allowed permission while they're still alive. That's number one. And number two, he could be, say, their successor, which means he's not going to be available anyway. But I look at it this way. If you see somebody out there that you think can help your team, bring them in. I mean, there's no limit to the amount of good minds you can have working for you if you feel there's somebody out there who's there who can help you. So that's the way I look at it. If there's a guy out there who you think makes your team better, there's no reason not to sign him.
I agree with that, but doesn't it feel like blocking Mark Hunter and Kyle Dubas, these guys that probably in their own mind say, I'm going to be a GM in 3 years? You bring someone else in, all of a sudden they're ripe to be poached, no?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, it depends. Like, again, Ryan, I think the thing that everybody has to understand here is that we are, and I'm talking about we as the people of who are looking at this search, the GM is not anymore the be-all and end-all position in hockey front offices. That's the vice president or president of hockey operations, whatever it is. If you look at all the teams in the NHL that have this structure, okay, Jim Benning is the GM in Vancouver, and I think he's got a lot of say, but Trevor Linden has the final word out there. Brad Treliving is the GM in Calgary, and he's got a ton of say, but he's got Burke over his shoulder. And if you look at the situations around the league that are kind of like this, and we're seeing more and more of them, you know, it's just, I think we have to stop looking at it as, okay, this is the GM, and we respect this title. There's a certain way we've understood this title for years. And you have to look at a situation and say, okay, where is the power really? And, you know, I think the biggest decision that the Maple Leafs have right now is, if you make Mark Hunter the GM, is that going to affect his ability to do what he does so well right now, and that is find players? And that's the number one question I think you have to have. Because if you're worried that, you know, he can't do both, then you probably have to say, you know, find players for now. I think the other thing, too, that the Maple Leafs have to deal with here, and it's not a major concern, but it is something that you have to deal with, is that somebody from the front office is going to have to do your interviews. And Mark Hunter, he hates doing interviews. He does not like to talk. So I wonder if that's part of the deal. Somebody else out there is going to, whoever does this job is going to have to be the one who explains what we're up to.
I like the explanation. You're right. If you look at GM in the traditional sense, none of this makes sense. If you look at the new hierarchies we're seeing, you mentioned Vancouver, Calgary, Edmonton, Columbus, very similar, then maybe it isn't as confusing. Yeah.
You know what? I think that's the way it is. I think we're looking at a situation now where, we grew up, and there's a couple generations of fans grew up out there who were listening to this. They grew up with the GM being the boss, okay? In Toronto, whoever this GM is going to be, they're going to have say. No question they're going to have say. But are they going to be the boss, what the final say? No, they're not. And the role is going to be very strictly defined, I think. I think, like, you look at it, you can see the way that this front office is shaping up. There's Shanahan on top. There's Babcock, who's going to have a lot of power, obviously. You got Hunter, who's going to be in charge of finding players. You're going to see Dubas, who's going to be responsible for finding players and running the AHL team. You have Pridham, who's going to be responsible for, doing a lot of negotiation. And I have a feeling that his duties will increase over time, too, because he's a pretty bright guy. And then you're going to have the GM, whoever that is, they're responsible to be, okay, this is what everybody's input is, including my own. I'm going to go out and implement it. I'm going to call they're going to be responsible for doing all the legwork. And that's an important job because an organization is not going to win unless it knows everything that's going on out there. And you know who was really good at that? I remember when I first started out, I remember reading an article from Peter Gammons in Baseball that there were four GMs who started a lot of the trade deadlines. A lot of the trades went through four GMs because they were the guys that knew the most. And one of those guys was Gord Ashe when he was running the Blue Jays. He named him as a guy who really was on the pulse of what was available in baseball. So I saw this article and I went and I asked Gord Ashe about it years ago when I was still at the Fan. And he told me that the thing that is so important is information. Who's available? Who isn't? What teams are looking for? What's happening with this guy? Is there a reason that guy's slumping? All that stuff. And whoever's going to be, because every little bit of information that you know that maybe somebody else doesn't is an advantage to you. And that's who this GM is going to be. Their responsibility is going to know more than anyone else what's going on around the league. Who's available? Who's not? Is there a problem with this player? Is a team having difficulties with that player? The coach and this guy not getting along? They're a little bit down on him. Maybe we can get him cheap. This college free agent isn't going to sign. We've got to keep an eye on that. That job is critical because it's your information job. And that's why I think even though it's going to be different than what we're used to, Ryan, it's going to be important.
Well said, sir. That's NHL insider Elliot Friedman. Enjoy the game tonight between Tampa and New York.
All right, Ryan. Good luck searching for that real estate, okay?
Yeah, we don't need any rumors there, Elliot.
Make sure three mortgages, all right? You're going to need that.
Didn't help last time either, the rumors. So, thank you.
Ryan. See you later. Bye.